How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure. Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change, like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
Yeah. I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure. Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change, like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
Yeah. I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
American Fork, Utah has been described as a sleepy town. It is located in northern Utah, approximately 30 miles south of the capital of Utah, Salt Lake City, and it is part of the Provo-Orem metropolitan area. The population was around 14,000 in 1984. Its rapid growth has brought that number to over twice that as of 2019. Settled in 1850 by Mormon pioneers, the predominant religion is the Church of Jesus Christ, with the first ward being formed in 1851. A little bit of trivia, Daniel Wayne Sermon and Andrew Tolman, members of the group Imagine Dragons, are both from American Fork. The neighborhoods were dotted with homes and condominiums of well-maintained yards, and the neighbors were a close-knit bunch back in 1984. It remains that way to this day. American Fork is the city where Alan, Brenda, and their 15-month-old baby, Erica, lived in a small red duplex. Alan left for work early on the morning of July 24, 1984. This day happens to be a Utah holiday called Pioneer Day. It commemorates the arrival of Brigham Young and his followers into the Salt Lake Valley on July 24, 1847. It was to be a long day for Alan, as his work as a tile setter was taking him to the city of Ogden, approximately 70 miles away. He phoned Brenda on his lunch break, and they spoke briefly before Brenda put baby Erica on the phone. She made the cute sounds that babies make at 15 months of age. He did not know that this would be the last time he ever spoke to Brenda and Erica. Welcome to Crimatorium, Episode 1. I'm your host, Madeline. Today's episode deals with the topic of a religious sect called the Church of Jesus Christ. Those outside of the religion may still know them as the Mormons, LDS, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They now prefer to be known by the Church of Jesus Christ. The term Mormon is considered a nickname by members of the church. Throughout this episode, however, I will be using the term Mormon as well as LDS, as it was common for everyone to use these back in 1984 and still is today. I was born and raised in Utah and lived in the area and time where this event took place. I respect many of the church teachings. It emphasizes the importance of families, morals, and values. Mormons are a happy, resourceful, friendly people. If you have an LDS neighbor, you can be sure that you will receive funeral potatoes and other delicious food delivered to your door at a time of need. This episode took me down many rabbit holes. Just when I thought I had the story wrapped up, something else would surface. This case starts long before 1984. It began in the 1830s by a young man named Joseph Smith, who lived in Palmyra, New York. There is quite an interesting history that would need to be covered in order to get a full understanding of the Lafferty story. One book that was helpful in my research is called Under the Banner of Heaven by John Krakauer. I've covered the parts of this case that I believe will be of most interest to the listeners, but I suggest reading the book if you would like to take a deeper dive. This episode includes the death of a mother and her child. There are also discussions of her religious nature. Listener discretion is advised. Watson Leroy Lafferty and Claudine Jones were married on June 6, 1940, in the Salt Lake LDS Temple. An LDS temple is considered holy amongst the members, as it is a place where sacred ordinances are performed and couples are joined in marriage for what the Mormons call time and all eternity. Together they raised 8 children, 2 girls and 6 boys, with Ron being the oldest, Alan the youngest, and Dan 6 years younger than Ron. By all outside appearances, the Lafferty family was tight-knit, obedient, disciplined, and happy. They lived in Provo, the home of Brigham Young University, which is also located in Utah County. They were well known as Watson Lafferty was a chiropractor. He had a thriving practice that he ran out of his home. It is said that Watson was strict and a disciplinarian who instilled in his children self-sufficiency and the value of hard work. It is also said that Watson planted the seeds of paranoia, rebellion, and fanaticism in his children. He taught them to distrust modern medicine and the federal government. He also took his religious beliefs to the extreme. When one son accidentally shot himself in the stomach with an arrow, he told him he would have to suffer until morning for breaking the Sabbath. Together, the Laffertys would cultivate the family garden, growing fruits and vegetables for the family to eat and preserve. In the LDS faith, boys are encouraged but not required to go on missions at the age of 19, and most do. It is voluntary and self-funded. The Lafferty boys were no exception. In 1960, Ron was called to serve a mission to Florida. After serving faithfully for 2 years, he came home and married Diana and soon had their first child, Kara Lee. Dan was called to serve a mission 6 years later to Scotland. He was the first person in his family to travel outside of the country. While there, he met his future wife, Matilda, who had 2 daughters from a previous relationship. After spending 2 years on his church mission, Dan and Matilda married and in 1977 had a daughter they named Rebecca. Ron was said to be a doting father and a good provider for his family. Dan was also attentive to the 3 girls, and they adored him. Dan went to school to become a chiropractor like his dad, and it was around that time his behavior and beliefs started to change. This was partly spurred on by a set of events that occurred while he was attending college. He and Matilda ran a sandwich shop out of their home. They, along with the girls, prepared the sandwiches, and Dan would sell them to students on campus. It was quite profitable, and they made enough for the family to live on while Dan was attending school. It wasn't long before the health department and the IRS caught wind of this endeavor and shut the business down, and demanded that taxes to be paid on the proceeds from the sales of the sandwiches. This infuriated Dan. It was shortly after this that he became anti-government, revoked his driver's license, and quit paying taxes. He even tried to refuse to pay sales tax, which he wasn't usually successful at. Dan had always strived to be Christ-like, but this desire started to evolve into something else altogether. He was veering away from his religious roots as he felt that the Mormon Church has strayed from the original teachings of the Book of Mormon, Joseph Smith, and the practice of polygamy. He began holding meetings in his home, preaching his disdain for the control he perceived the government had over people, while also speaking out against the Mormon Church for its modern-day teachings. This weekly meeting included only men, mostly the Lafferty brothers, and was a church of sorts. One person that attended these meetings was youngest brother, Alan. He seemed to agree with Dan's new philosophies and ideas, so much so that he began trying to implement these beliefs within his own family. Ron started attending these School of Prophet meetings as well, and he became a believer too. One of the ideologies discussed was that women are to stay home with the children and be open to the practice of polygamy. Brenda, Alan's wife, was a strong-willed and educated young woman, and she wasn't open to this proposed lifestyle change. She and Alan met while Brenda attended Brigham Young University and Alan attended Utah Technical College. She was a journalism student and a broadcasting anchor for the university-run channel KBYU-TV. Brenda was born on July 19, 1960, to parents Larray and James Wright. She grew up in Kimberly, Idaho, with five sisters and one brother. They were a close and happy LDS family. Brenda has been described as fun, energetic, bubbly, smart, and driven. She was formerly a beauty scholarship contender, where she was crowned second runner-up to Miss Idaho. She was tall, slender, and pretty, and in some of her pictures, you can see that she had freckles. She had just recently aspired to write children's books. Alan and Brenda married in the LDS Temple in 1982, and on April 28, 1983, they welcomed Erica Lane Lafferty into their family. Alan and Brenda decided it would be best for Brenda to stay at home and be a full-time housewife and mother. Grandparents James and Larray said of Erica, quote, "Oh, we loved her. She was a joy, a petite little girl, very active. She was learning to speak quickly and would have been walking soon," unquote. Ron was considered to be one of the leaders of this School of Prophets group and claimed to receive revelations from God. One revelation claimed that his wife Diana had been the wife of the devil in a previous life. Another revelation he had was revealed to the School of Prophecy, and it caused a stir amongst the members. Ron called it the revelation of removal. It reads as follows. "Thus saith the Lord unto my servants, the prophets, it is my will and commandment that ye remove the following individuals in order that my work might go forward. For they have truly become obstacles in my path, and I will not allow my work to be stopped. First, thy brother's wife Brenda and her baby, then Chloe Lowe, and then Robert Stowe. And it is my will that they be removed in rapid succession, and that an example be made of them in order that others might see the fate of those who fight against the true saints of God. And it is my will that this matter be taken care of as soon as possible, and I will prepare a way for my instrument to be delivered and instruction be given unto my servant. And it is my will that they show great care in his duties, for I have raised him up and prepared him for this important work. And is he not like unto my servant Porter Rockwell? And great blessings await him, for I am the Lord thy God, and have control over all things. Be still, and know that I am with thee. Even so, amen. Chloe Lowe and Robert Stowe were neighbors and friends of Ron's and Diana, and he saw them as traitors for providing support to his wife at the time she was questioning Ron's changing beliefs. Robert Stowe also provided over Ron's excommunication from the church. Porter Rockwell, who was mentioned in the revelation, was a bodyguard to Mormon Church founder and prophet Joseph Smith, and a good friend of his from childhood. This revelation was rejected by all of the members of this school of prophecy, except two of the Lafferty brothers, Watson Jr. and Dan. Alan, Brenda's husband, had some involvement in the school of prophecy at certain times, but it is not clear if he was present at the time this revelation was revealed. However, he did concede to knowing about it at a later time. Dan believed his brother did indeed have a revelation and felt it was God's will and would not let anything get in the way of fulfilling it. Ron and Dan broke off with the school of prophecy due to their lack of support for this revelation of removal. Ron made a veiled threat to the others before leaving the group, causing concern and fear amongst the members. Ron's wife Diana and Dan's wife Matilda were not in favor of the changes they were seeing in their husbands. The final straw came for Matilda when Dan announced that he wanted to take his stepdaughter, who was 14 at the time, as his second wife. Matilda's daughter also reported that Dan had sexually abused her on several occasions. For these reasons, Dan was excommunicated from the Mormon Church. Dan eventually discarded the idea of marrying his stepdaughter and instead married a Romanian immigrant woman named Anna Randak, who took care of Robert Redford's horses on a ranch he owned in Spanish Fork, Utah. He was technically practicing polygamy, even though Dan and Matilda's marriage was about to end. What eventually became of this marriage is not clear. Matilda and Diana frequently called upon Brenda for advice as to how to handle the changes they were seeing in their husbands, as she seemed to be the one that wasn't afraid to stand up to her husband. She advised the women that they did not have to accept this new belief system, and this is part of what caused Ron the angst he had for Brenda. Ron also blamed Brenda for keeping Alan from being fully engaged in the ideologies that Ron and Dan had adopted. Diana ended up divorcing Ron and moving with their six kids to Florida. Dan moved out of the home he shared with Matilda and the three girls, and they divorced as well. Dan and Ron went on an extended trip together in Ron's green Impala wagon, at times practically living in it. On July 24th of 1984, Dan, Ron, Ricky Knapp, and Chip Carnes, two men that the brothers had picked up hitchhiking in their travels, loaded up knives, a sawed-off shotgun, and ammunition, and headed to Alan and Erica's duplex. They arrived at around 1:30 and pulled into the driveway. It was noted that Brenda's car was there. Ron got out and went up to the door alone. He was carrying the sawed-off shotgun up his right-hand sleeve and the knife in his boot. Ron opened the screen door and knocked several times. There was no answer. Dan was relieved, thinking this was a test of faith from God and that they didn't really have to go through with it. They had passed the test, much like Abraham of the Old Testament. Ron shrugged and got back into the car. Dan drove about a block and a half away when he claimed he was overcome by a weird feeling that he should go back to Alan and Brenda's. He surmised that perhaps he was the one that was supposed to fulfill this revelation from God.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Dan turned the car towards Alan and Brenda's and pulled into the driveway once again. Dan stepped out of the car and knocked on the door. This time, Brenda answered. He began by asking her where Alan was, and she stated that he was at work. Dan recalled that he was silently talking to God and wondering what to do next. After a few seconds, he pushed past Brenda and entered the duplex. Brenda must have known that whatever was going to happen was going to end badly, as her words to Dan were, quote, "I knew you were going to do something that nobody could stop," unquote. Ron eventually made his way into the duplex and saw what was going on. Dan had Brenda pinned to the floor. She tried to reason with both of them, saying she would do anything they wanted and begged them not to hurt her baby. Ron began punching Brenda in the face, trying to knock her out to subdue her, all the while calling her a bitch and a liar. She managed to get up and run into the kitchen, where the sheer terror and blows to the face caused her to faint. Dan asked Ron to cut the cord from the vacuum. He then took that cord and wrapped it around Brenda's neck twice and tied it in a knot. And with the knife that Ron had handed to him, he slit Brenda's throat. While this struggle and mayhem was going on, Knapp and Carnes were waiting in the car. They were able to hear some of the commotion, then it suddenly quieted down. They became nervous about being involved in this crime and contemplated leaving with the car, but after some reasoning, decided against it. Dan walked down the hall. He had never been to Brenda and Alan's home before, and claimed the spirit led him into baby Erica's room. Dan guessed that Erica must have thought he was her daddy, as they both had beards and their voices sounded similar. How dreadful is that, that if she did think this was her daddy? Dan talked to Erica, saying, quote, "I'm not sure what this is all about, but apparently it is God's will that you leave the world. Perhaps we can talk about it later," unquote. Dan held onto Erica's little head and placed the knife on her neck and sliced it with enough force that it nearly decapitated her. Ron and Dan left the duplex and, with their clothes covered in blood, got into the car and drove away. The brothers arrived at Chloe Stowe's house intending to murder her and knocked on the door, finding nobody home. Ron and Dan broke in, stealing some items, malingering for a while, then leaving. Feeling like they had done enough for the Lord that day, they decided against going to Robert Stowe's home. Alan arrived home from work at around 8 p.m. that night. He walked up to the door and noted that it was locked, which was unusual because Alan and Brenda never locked their doors when they were at home. He entered the duplex and called her name. He saw the blood, and then he spotted Brenda lying lifeless, face down on the kitchen floor, surrounded in blood. She had sustained a severe beating and had obviously been strangled, as the vacuum cord was still wrapped around her neck. According to the medical examiner, her throat was cut. A 6-inch-long incision sliced through her trachea, both jugular veins, and both carotid arteries, and left a cut on her spinal column. Blood was smeared everywhere, the drapes, the walls, light switches. It was obvious there had been a major struggle. He went down the hallway towards baby Erica's room and found the little one propped against the back of her crib. Head slumped over, her neck had been gashed from ear to ear. The medical examiner determined that both Brenda and Erica were alive at the time Dan viciously and without mercy slit their throats. Alan ran to the neighbor's house and called the police. Once they arrived, Alan was taken to the police department and sat down for an interview with Sergeant Fox of the American Fork Police Department. Alan appeared to be visibly shaken. As expected, he being the husband of Brenda, he had to be questioned as to his possible involvement. During this interview, Alan had some information that needed to be shared. Alan suspected his brothers Ron and Dan were the perpetrators. He also indicated that he had heard them speak about this revelation for removal, but he never thought they would go through with it. The police were also able to ascertain that a neighbor saw a green station wagon parked in Alan and Brenda's duplex driveway on the morning of July 24th. The FBI put out an all-points bulletin for Ron's station wagon and were able to locate it in Cheyenne, Wyoming. The police entered into the home where it was parked with guns drawn and found that there were two men at the residence. But it wasn't the Lafferty's. It was Knapp and Carnes, the hitchhikers that were waiting in the car while the murders took place. They had stolen the car and parted ways with the brothers. They claimed to not know where Ron and Dan were, but they did lead the police to a bloody knife. Lab results showed that the blood on the knife was Brenda's. The FBI received a tip that Ron and Dan had been spotted in Reno, Nevada, at the Circus Casino. And when they arrived, the brothers were standing in the buffet line. They were arrested without incident. Ron and Dan Lafferty were transported to the American Fork Court and were arraigned together for aggravated burglary, 2 counts of first-degree murder, and conspiracy to commit murder. Dan chose to represent himself with the help of standby counsel. The jury returned with a guilty verdict on all counts. Dan was given 2 life sentences without the possibility of parole. Ron was given the death penalty, as he was seen as the instigator. Criminals back then were given the choice of how they wanted to be executed, and he chose the firing squad. The two hitchhikers, Chip Carnes and Ricky Knapp, originally faced the same murder charges in this case, but agreed to testify for the state and pled guilty to reduced charges. Prior to his trial, Ron attempted to commit suicide in the Utah County Jail. It is claimed that this caused mental damage, and as a result, he spent several months in the Utah State Hospital for evaluation. Attorneys have tried throughout the years to appeal his conviction based on his mental status, ineffective counsel, and the fact that it was a high-profile case, preventing him from getting a fair trial. Each appeal, except one, was denied. He did receive a retrial in 1996 and was again convicted on all counts and sentenced to death. In 2008, a woman named Christy Strack began writing to Dan Lafferty in prison. She was only 8 when he committed his crimes, but after she read about the case, she became enamored with him and his teachings. In 2008, she contacted his daughter Rebecca to arrange for a meeting with him. Soon she and her husband Benjamin began visiting Dan in prison. They would talk about the end of the world, life, families, and religious philosophies. Dan claims that he and Christy fell in love with Benjamin's knowledge, and Benjamin was okay with it. The last time Dan saw them in 2014, he had cut off his hair and beard and had given it to Christy. He had even indicated that he wanted his ashes to go to Christy when he died. Christy had often expressed her thoughts about taking her life and that of her kids in order to leave the evil world behind and due to her fear of the pending apocalypse. Dan encouraged her to do it. On September 27, 2014, Christy and Ben gave three of their children a lethal mixture of methadone, prescription medication, and cough syrup before ingesting it themselves. Their bodies were later found by Christy's oldest son by a previous marriage, who wasn't in the home at the time the deaths occurred. Dan proudly takes credit for this family's demise. Epilogue. Alan Lafferty is remarried. I was unable to find any further details regarding this. Watson Lafferty passed away in 1983, the year before the crimes occurred. He died from complications due to his diabetes. Claudine Lafferty, Ron and Dan's mother, died in 2016 at the age of 96. The burden of what her sons did always weighed heavily on her. Lorraine Wright, Brenda's mom, also died in 2016 at the age of 82. It was thought that 2020 would be the year that Ron would be executed, but Ronald Watson Lafferty died in prison on November 11, 2019, of natural causes. He was 78. He spent 34 years on death row, one of the longest stays on death row ever at the state prison. Dan Lafferty is 72 and is serving out his life sentence at the Utah State Prison in Draper, Utah. He doesn't get many visits from his family, if any. He stated in an interview that the killing of Brenda and Erica has never haunted or bothered him. As for Knapp and Carnes, I was not able to find any updated information on them. Brenda's dad is still alive, and he is thankful that Ron died of natural causes so that the family wouldn't have to face dealing with his execution. In a recent interview, he spoke of giving little Erica her first ice cream and stirring it up to make it soft like Dairy Queen, and Brenda's love of scrapbooking. And his pride was especially apparent when talking about her job as a broadcasting anchor at KBYU-TV. He spoke of the never-ending sorrow that the loss of Brenda and Erica has caused to the family. He said of the sentence of execution, quote, "From the very beginning, we as a family turn that over to the Lord and the law," unquote. He also added that the family has moved forward instead of getting caught up in hate, quote, "and things like that," unquote. Jim visits the gravesite weekly and has done so since their deaths. Brenda and Erica's headstone reads, "The life spent in doing good and accomplishing goals will be remembered beyond that span of life itself." Brenda and Erica were laid together in a peaceful resting place in a cemetery located in Twin Falls County, Idaho. Erica is resting forever upon her mother's chest in an eternal embrace. Thank you for listening to this episode. I finished writing it on the 36th anniversary of Brenda and Erica's death. In the show notes below, I have added a link to donate to the Charlie Project. If you spend any time on that site, it isn't hard to believe how much work goes into it. Please consider donating $5 or more so that this important work can continue to expand. It provides an invaluable service to all who have been affected by a missing loved one. If you're interested in connecting, Crematorium can be found on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Please subscribe via your favorite platform to the podcast. Support in any form means so much to those of us that have podcasts. Episodes will drop bi-weekly, and I will focus on lesser-known crimes when possible. Pictures from today's episode can be found on crematorium.com. I would love to hear about any cases you would like covered. There is a case submissions form on the crematorium website, or direct message me through social media. I'd like to take this time to say a big thank you to my wonderful friend Tony for suggesting this case. This show is researched, written, and narrated by me, Madeline.
It's time to turn your bathroom into your personal sanctuary with Lowe's. Right now, save big on stylish fixtures and more storage, like a white shaker-style vanity cabinet with vanity top and mirror, now just $199. Or a dark gray vanity cabinet with white cultured marble top for just $299. Don't just do it yourself. Do it for yourself. Find more savings on everything you need for your home projects at Lowe's today. U.S. only, valid through February 2nd, 2021. It's time to turn your bathroom into your personal sanctuary with Lowe's. Right now, save big on stylish fixtures and more storage, like a white shaker-style vanity cabinet with vanity top and mirror, now just $199. Or a dark gray vanity cabinet with white cultured marble top for just $299. Don't just do it yourself. Do it for yourself. Find more savings on everything you need for your home projects at Lowe's today. U.S. only, valid through February 2nd, 2021.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.